the crowd on its feet. They are absolutely silent.
Wow, harder than I thought. Racing and talking at the same time.
Welcome to World of Motorcycling, covering rider culture and the motorcycle industry with John Davis, Walt Fletcher, and Steve, the producer, Johan.
Welcome, everyone, to another hour of the World of Motorcycling. I'm Steve, and with my co-host Walt and John. Walt's running a little late, and we've got a guest tonight, so I do not want her to be late. So we've started out just a little early with Walt coming in a little later. We've got a great show lined up for you. We always like to start things off with Inside the Helmet, where we do a ride-by overview of what's happening in the motorcycling industry. And we got John back this week because he is now off his extra training, at least for another month. So how things going there?
It's not the end. But
no, it's never the end for you. You're always training.
Yep.
So what I came across is big news from Polaris. Polaris Industries, a global leader in power sports, as everybody knows, announced that it has been named in the Fortune 500 for the first time in its history, making its debut at the at number 496. And that is quite a huge thing. When you hit the Fortune 500, that means you've kind of you're in the big leagues now.
Yeah, you've kind of arrived.
And so that's wonderful. I think Harley's been there for a while. And then P Group is building an alliance with Chinese company Foton Motor Group, and that's Piaggio Group and Foton Motor Group, announced they have reached an agreement for the development of an innovative solutions to the light commercial vehicle market. The chairman CEO of Piaggio and CSPA, Robert Colanino, and vice president of Foton Motor Group, and president of Foton International, Mr. Cheng Ryo, have signed a final contract for the development and production of a new range of four-wheel light commercial vehicles as envisaged by the primary agreement signed in Beijing in 2017. And so it's just my stupid software thing there, and it doesn't listen to me. Anyway, so that's a really cool thing. Of course, they're working to get into that Chinese market. That's a huge marketplace for a lot of motorcycle companies and other companies. And then last but not least, I kind of wanted to wait till Walt here. Actually, I came across this. Have you ever heard of DigiLens, John?
I've heard the term. I'm not real familiar with what it is.
Well, it's a silicone-based company revolutionizing AR displays through innovative waveguide optics and property materials, announced that it's eagerly anticipated two-layer augmented reality waveguide display. This goes on motorcycle helmet lenses. Is now thinner, lighter, and can be manufactured at a much faster pace, resulting in a breakthrough in affordability. It's for smart helmet applications being developed by industry leaders. The mono HUD provides motorcycle and bike riders with distraction-free constant directing of their inline of sight so they can keep their eyes focused on the road ahead. But it just shows their bike speed, gear change, fuel and oil level status can be monitored along with maps, real-time accident reports, warnings, music, and other non-distractive smartphone applications, all without looking down at their smartphone. And in addition, the two-layer display replaces the original three-layer design. And my thinking is this. When I'm riding a motorcycle, the only thing I want to be looking at is the road ahead. I am not even thinking about looking at my speedometer, looking at the fuel gauge, looking at traffic, or any of this stuff. I am focused 100% primarily on what is ahead of me, what's on the side of me, and what's behind me. And I personally would be distracted to no end having little readouts on my lens, especially if the fact is I wear my corrective lenses. They're like a graduated. So down below are the reading, and then up above where I'm my straight out eyesight, those are for my long because I got astigmatism. Right. And if I'm sitting there looking straight ahead and I've got this stuff going on, my eyes would want to go down a little bit to see the lower part of it, and I would start losing touch with the road. Now, that's me. What do you think, John? What do you think is something you would appreciate?
I think I would find it distracting, to be honest. I mean, if I want to know how fast I'm going, my motorcycle has a speedometer. They all do. So a quick glance at the speedometer and you know how fast you're going. You actually develop a pretty good feel for speed where you can, you know, usually be within a few miles an hour of what you're actually going just by sound and feel. But yeah, having a whole bunch of other stuff going on, I think I would find that quite distracting. You know, I do listen to music sometimes if I'm on a long ride.
Right.
Because it actually does help to keep me more alert.
Yep.
Beyond that, no thanks. The fewer flashing lights and gizmos in my line of sight, the better as far as I'm concerned.
You know, I think it would be interesting if there was a way to contact one of these companies that put out the smart helmets and say, hey, we'll talk you up if you're willing to give us a helmet, and we'd all like to try one, and then test ride it, and, you know, do it in a safe, secure area where, you know, there's not a lot of people around, and give it a try to see if this is something that you could work into. But like you and I'm more of a simplistic kind of guy. I want to keep it simple, and I think the more complicated, it's going to distract me. I mean, it'd be like driving down the road in my car, and all of a sudden on the windshield, I've got readouts going. Well, I don't really want that. I'm pretty adept, like you said, of looking down, seeing the speedometer. I don't typically look at my fuel gauges and all that. I pretty much know where it's at. I mean, I look at it when I start my car up, and that's pretty much all I need to do. I'm not sitting there worried about.
I don't need reality to look like a video game.
No. I'm not in a jet fighter trying to blow somebody out of the sky.
No.
There's my target.
If I want to play a video game, I'll play a video game. I'd rather go ride my motorcycle, and that's a completely different experience.
That's what I kind of put in my notes. I think this seems to me more of a gamer kind of application, people that are used to doing multitasking where they're playing games, looking at their cell phone, and listening to music at the same time while carrying on a conversation, which is what my sons do. They're in that, interestingly enough, the new generation, because of their immersed life of video and YouTube and gaming and screens and all that, they are the first generation to actually be what you would call a multi-use type person, where they can actually do multitask without having a problem. Me, I think I can do it, but a lot of times something slips when I'm trying to do multitasking, so I have to turn down, get away from everything, and make it more more focused on what I'm doing. So there's our music. We got a really cool guest coming up, so stick with us, and we'll be right back with more of the World of Motorcycling. Hey everyone, Steve Johann here, producer of the World of Motorcycling show. If you have any interest in what's happening in the automotive world, then I invite you to listen to a really cool show called Horsepower Chrome and Rust, where we cover car culture and the automotive industry. Horsepower Chrome and Rust is a fast-paced weekly podcast featuring Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and me, Steve Johann. You can hear the show at horsepowerchromeandrust.podomatic.com. where we'll be waiting for you.
What are all the things you witness online in a day? Cats playing piano, selfies on your feed, your friend's picture being turned into a nasty meme that's been shared 50 times, 51, 52. When someone's being bullied online, it's hard to know what to do. Now you can speak up with the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Do you suffer from gastrointestinal anguish after eating spicy foods at your local Mexican restaurant? Do you suffer outrageous amounts of flatulence after eating greasy foods at your local fast food joint? Do you suffer from acid reflux after ingesting copious amounts of alcoholic beverages at your local drinking hole? Then call the law offices of Ambulance and Chaser at 1-800-782-5377. Where we have helped thousands of so-called victims just like yourself. If you call us today at 1-800-782-5377, we'll make sure to send you out our free guide, The Top 20 Medical Issues Most Likely to Be Sued Over. But act today, because the longer you wait, the less chance you have to win your case. Remember, you don't have to suffer any longer. Instead, call us at 1-800-782-5377. The Law Offices of Ambulance and Chaser, making the most out of your misery. Please be advised, a law firm of Ambience & Chaser is not licensed to practice law in all 50 states and may be called into question by the federal government for questionable practices, but hey, that's okay. You knew that already, didn't you? You greedy sucker.
Welcome back to the second segment of World of Motorcycling. Walt, Steve, and John here. For more about the show, please visit us at www.worldofmotorcycling.com. We start this segment off with our candid conversations, where we spend some time interviewing the movers and shakers, the pioneers and speed freaks, the customizers and rebels within the world of motorcycling. And tonight we have an awesome guest, Tamala Rich, who's published a book called Hit the Road. And so she's going to tell us a little bit about her experiences touring, touring solo as a female rider.
Yeah.
It's welcome, Tamala.
Yeah. Welcome, Tamala.
Thank you. Thank you.
And, for those who don't know, Tamala is a very talented rider, and she's also a moto journalist, and she's a tour operator, and she's a TV personality in her neck of the woods. And Tamala, can people just go to TamalaRich.com and get more information and buy your book?
They can indeed. Or if they don't want to buy it from my website, they can buy it on Amazon in digital and print.
There you go. And it's called Hit the Road.
Hit the Road. A Woman's Guide to Solo Motorcycle Touring.
Very good. So
I would think if it's solo that you must have a concealed weapons permit or something, because I don't think I want a woman out there.
You know, I cover that. I have a whole chapter on weapons and self-defense and considerations,
yep.
And I do not carry.
Oh,
you know, isn't that funny? That's the first thing Walt's thinking about.
I know. It's right where Walt's mind is.
I have never thought about having to carry one.
I have had so many people in my life who've tried to kill me. Then again, most of them were members
that
of
was
the
back in
the, you know,
that was back Walt, when you were in the military.
I know, that's what I was going to say.
Jeez, but, Walt, that was 30
Walt,
years
what's
ago.
What's the common denominator in all of those situations?
Yep.
Walt. Walt's the common denominator.
that and being a cop. I mean, when I was
there
a cop,
you go.
There was a lot of people trying to kill me. But
so, Tamala.
I have a chapter on run-ins with the law as well.
Oh, that's good. We need to know more about that because we've had different interesting guests on the past who've had a lot of run-ins with the law, and
some more than others.
Yes, and so let's step back and let's talk a little bit about yourself. When did you get into riding?
Believe it or not, it was 2010.
That's pretty close to Walt.
Is that right? No.
Walt, when did you start?
2005.
That's right. 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Not
right.
Too far apart.
So 2010, and now here you are 8 years later. You're quite the expert. So talk to us how that evolved from riding the first time into where you got to today.
You know, it's just, life has a way of unfolding. You know, you think you know where you're going. You think you know how you're going to get there. And, you know, you got to be open to, you know, what comes along. So I got the idea of taking a cross-country motorcycle trip. My father and my brother in 2008, they decided that they wanted to take up motorcycling together instead of like one of them teaching the other something that they knew they wanted to learn something together. And so they bought identical BMW R1200 GSs. And my father...
Go big or go home.
Well, they knew how to ride. I mean, it's not like they had never thrown a leg over. But my father lives most of the time in Nevada, and my brother lives most of the time in Ohio. And so what they agreed to do was my brother would go out, they would meet in Salt Lake City, and then they did the big tour that I think one of you is getting ready to do. They did Tetons and Yellowstone and Glacier, and they went, you know, through Rapid City and did the Black Hills and did all the stuff. And that was the first, I think that was the first year that iPhones were a thing. So this sounds like it was, you know, centuries ago or something, but it's only been, you know, 10, 12 years. I remember getting movies of all things attached to emails. It was a bizarre thing. They would send movies in my inbox. I was getting these movies from their travels. And I thought, oh, my God, I have to do that someday.
Yep.
And so at the time, I was winding down a very unprofitable business. My life had imploded. The economy was a mess. Like, all these things had gone wrong in my life. And I started getting this whispering in my ear that you should learn to ride a motorcycle and take a cross-country motorcycle trip. And so I decided I was going to do it. And so I did. The day after I got, now I took a lot of training before I hit the road, but 3 months after I got my motorcycle endorsement and the day after I took delivery of my motorcycle, I set off on a 19-state, 40-day journey from North Carolina to Oregon and back. And it was mostly solo, and I am an addict. I love motorcycling. I love solo motorcycling, even though I love tours. And the whole point is I get to take people to these great places that I've discovered on two wheels. And it's just so satisfying. I love it.
Oh, I love that. What a great story.
So now when you say solo motorcycling, do you camp out or do you like go to motels or what?
A little bit of both. I do like camping. I have a chapter about camping in the book. Now I'm not the kind of gal that beds down at the top of Beartooth Pass with the mountain goats and, you know, like all that kind of stuff. I do like going to campgrounds.
Right.
You know, staffed campgrounds. But I also have a story in the book about a time when I was going through oil country in North Dakota back in the height of the fracking boom up there, and there were no hotels, there were no campgrounds even within a 200-mile radius of Willett. And so I talk about the adventure of bedding down in a county park, actually. But that's unusual. I've never done that again. I like being in a staffed campground.
Well, and when you were going through that area, were you actually coming from or heading to Theodore Roosevelt National Park?
I had, let me think. Not on that, wait a minute. Not on that trip. On that one, I was headed up to Canada. I was going over.
Oh, yes, you were just.
I went up to Saskatchewan, and then I was going over to Winnipeg, and then
yep.
I was going to come on down. But I did do Theodore Roosevelt Park the year after that.
Yeah, because you go, Dixon, North Dakota, and stay there, and then you head out. And, we've done that. You know, it's funny because a lot of the places we talk about where you guys go on your motorcycle, I've been there with my family. We do car camping, and we just load up and spend 2 weeks on the road. And that's what you're doing is an adult out there on your own. And so, you know, most people are like, most guys like, I do have a few friends that do this kind of stuff, but most guys don't even spend 19 days out on the road by themselves, much less women, although we have a few interviews in the few years ago that we've done that do this. But you're a happily married mom, and you do normal things like anybody else, but you got the bug. So let's turn a corner here real quick and kind of get a little bit into your book. Well, I think I got something there about one of the chapters you have there is, there are different types of riders or
travelers.
Travelers. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, we all have things that we like to do, and it's been my experience that there's no better way to cater to your own interests or even to discover your own interests than to be on a solo trip. Because when you're with someone else, you're always compromising, and I don't mean that in a negative way, you know, but a good traveling companion will give and take with whoever it is they're traveling with. And sometimes, you know, you're going along with what other people want to do, and that suits you, but you don't really get to see what resonates with you especially or really indulge that. And so there are different kinds of travelers, and I came up with a traveler type quiz that you can take. So the traveler, and it's online, and I'm sure you can put it in the show notes, but what it does is it'll ask you a series of questions, and there are different there are different ways that we like to travel, and there are different things we like to do when we travel. And this will help you, the traveler type survey will help you suss out, you know, suss those things out. So, for example, you might be a nature lover, or you might be an more of an academic traveler. Like, you know, you might like to go to history museums and stop at all the roadside interpretive stands or whatever. Or you might be more of a cultural traveler. You know, you like to make sure that you go to festivals and rallies and like all the different things that'll help you determine, you know, if you're strong or weak in each of those things. And if you are traveling with other people, you can compare notes. So someone will say, oh, you know, I'm low on cultural travel, whereas, you know, I'm high on cultural travel. Okay. So that helps us negotiate how much we're going to cater to the other person so that everybody gets a say. There's no whining when everybody knows, okay, mom, today's mom's day to read all the little captions on all the museum displays, right? Because tomorrow you're going to get your turn to go pick up all the rocks that you want to, you know, collect or home or whatever. So anyway, then if you know the kind of traveler that you are, you can really, I give a lot of websites and apps and such where you can plan an itinerary according to your interests.
I like that.
Very nice.
So, Walt, I think you got to have one about eats, because that's something that Walt really
that's
enjoys doing.
That's a foodie traveler. Yes. That is. That's a foodie traveler. Exactly.
There you go. Because Walt, whenever we talk about, whenever I say I'm going to go somewhere, he says, the first thing,
where to go eat.
That's right. He knows exactly where. If he's been there, he'll tell me exactly where to go to get whatever it is that's really good and well-known in the area. So that's funny because
most of them look like a hole.
Right.
But they've got the best munchies you're going to find.
Those are usually the best.
Yes. Eat to ride, ride to eat. Right, Walt?
That's it.
Yes. Well, and it's funny because I don't think that. I'm usually running on ether when we're traveling as a family, and we lose weight and everything because we're trying to get – we run 14-hour days usually trying to get everything in, and then we get home and we go back to our normal routine. But that's funny because not everybody can do that. And we're coming up to our break. So, folks, I want you to make sure you go to tamlarich.com, and we're going to have a really cool PDF in our post. You'll already have seen it, but it's going to be on our blog and Facebook. And so hang on. We're going to be right back with more of our show and Tamla Rich.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, all you guys and gals. The next time you're hankering for a trip down memory lane, we recommend a visit to our Older Than the Hill Chateau de Smell Resort in Boondocks, Idaho, where the rooms smell like week-old cigarette smoke and month-old beer. Every weekend during the summer months, we feature our Old Maid Punker Run, Gooder Trash Clam Bake, and Big Ted's Keg Toss. And don't forget our complimentary Bloody Mary morning appetizers to chase away those late-night reveries. Sure enough, when you want to travel back and enjoy those old biker smell, then come to stay at Chateau de Smell, where our two mascots, Pit and Bull, will greet you at the gate and where we never leave the lights on. Because, hey, after all, we're going green. Chateau de Smell, because nothing beats the old days of smoky bars, stale beer, and crap on the carpet than a visit to Chateau de Smell. And for those who don't know how to spell Chateau de Smell, that's okay. We made it easy for you. It's smellit.com.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
You could crack a chrome crown nut, make a hardtail go soft. The compression in my engine.
Welcome back to the third segment of our show, where we continue our candid conversations. If you wish to participate in the show, make sure to visit our Facebook page, where you can make comments and contact us. Tonight's guest is Tamla Rich. And when I read it the first time, I thought it said Tamla Rich Moto, a journalist. No, it's Tamla Rich Moto Journalist.
Yes.
Author and motorcycle tour guide. You can find out more about Tamla and her work at www.tamlarich.com. And if you can't spell it, then that's too bad. But at any rate.
Well, I wanted us to...
It's like Pamela with a T. It's really...
It's Pamela with a T. It's
that's
not
right.
That hard.
I love the name. I was, you know, we were talking about traveler types, and you also talk about the fears, understanding your fears,
says there's five kinds of them.
Five types of fears. Why don't you go through that, because I understand this, so why don't you kind of explain a little bit?
Well, psychologists have determined that there really are only five fears, like every fear you can ever experience will fall into one of these categories. So they range from entirely psychological to entirely physical. So if you start on the entirely psychological end of it, it starts with shame and humiliation, right?
Yep.
There's nothing physical about that. It's all shame and humiliation. So, you know, you drop your bike or you do something like that. You know, you feel ashamed or you feel humiliated, right?
Yep.
But then you start moving into the more physical aspects of fear, and then it's separation. So separation is to be removed from either the people or the things that matter to you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little. It's psychological and physical.
I think that's called separation anxiety.
A little bit. Loss of autonomy is absolutely 50-50, because autonomy is your independence or your freedom, and so that can be physical freedom. Like, you know, I can, both my legs work, both my hands work, right? But, you know, at a certain point in most of our lives, we'll lose some of that function. But then also there's the psychological autonomy that we have to have, like just to feel the freedom in our psychological freedom to say what we want to say and do what we want to do with our lives. And then it becomes even more physical, because mutilation is the next one on the spectrum, and that's, you know, to be injured or disfigured or maybe even to lose a limb or member. And then death, of course, is the ultimate physical experience. And depending on what you believe about, you know, the soul and all
right.
this other kind of stuff, you know, you'll get a little philosophical on that end. But I think we can all agree that your physical existence does have an end, and that would be death. So that's 100% physical. So you move from humiliation, which is 100% psychological, to death, which is 100% physical. And there's lots of gray in between.
And how does that apply then to the writing?
Exactly. So if you know, or if you can start thinking about, we all have a tendency to respond to things that scare us through one of those five things. Like for me, my whole life's about loss of autonomy, like avoiding any situation where I have no agency. But for other people, it might be more about social stigma, you know, humiliation or whatever. And so let's say that that's you and you drop your bike. Okay, if you know that you're more susceptible to feel fear in that way, it makes it easier for you to look at it more objectively and to shake it off and come back. It also helps you with your self-talk. I tell the story when I was lost I wasn't lost, but I was by myself in the Teton National Forest after dark. And, you guys are getting ready to head out that way. So you've probably been there before, and you know that in Wyoming, unless you're in Cheyenne or something, there basically are no streetlights. If you're not in the city, you're just out in the Teton National Forest. It's not like an interstate where there's, lights above. So I was after dark, and there was this warning sign of three large mammals that could rush out and clobber me at any minute. And then at another point in that journey, I was freaked out about, not being able to see these animals. I didn't have auxiliary lights at that time. So then I'm going along, and they're doing road construction, which is not normally a big deal for me, except for the fact that there was no road. I mean, it was down to bare earth. It had rained a couple of hours before I got there. There were no lights. I couldn't see. There were these three large mammals that could clobber me. Like, my whole life was, passing before my eyes. And I had to get a grip, and I had to really practice good self-talk. So when you know what you're susceptible to in the way of fear, you can practice some good self-talk before you get yourself into one of those jams. Like, I had some slogans ready to go because I'd done a lot of this work with fear before I set out.
Is that making sense? I think that makes 100%. I think you could apply that not only to motorcycling, but anything.
Yep.
I'm susceptible to separation anxiety. I never used to. But once I had started having family and kids and everything, whenever I'm going somewhere on my own, it's like, God, I get all this anxiousness and everything. I'm like, what's going on here? Oh, pinpoint it. Separation anxiety.
Yeah.
I'm leaving my loved ones.
Well, I'm actually the other way around.
Yes, you are, because you left them for...
I have anxiety of having too many of my kids together and starting a fist fight or whatever. But
well...
Don't invite me to your family reunion.
Yeah. No.
My biggest fear, though, is actually a combination of the last two you had, because I'm actually pastor of a church, so as you can imagine, I'm not that worried about dying, but I am terrified of not dying and getting hurt real bad.
Right.
Because I don't do pain well at all. So if the Lord wants to kill me, press on.
Yeah, so that's in the middle there. That's number three and number four. That's loss of autonomy and dismemberment. That's those two right there.
I think that's probably one of the biggest things that we've discovered and I've discovered over the years. When you talk to people about motorcycling in general, is their eyes get really big. And that, don't you know they're called murder cycles and people die on those? And that's their first thought, is the danger aspect of riding on that motorcycle. And I think above anything else, that is what prevents people from getting on two wheels. Above anything else, whether it's trail bike riding or street bike riding, is the fear of injuring oneself or even dying in an accident. And that's a very huge... Now, they could get in a horrendous wreck in their car, and they'll go right back out, buy another car, and keep driving and not think twice about it.
Mm-hmm. But, I'm saying nobody who was ever in a car accident has been asked, well, I guess you're not going to ride in a car anymore, are you? And that doesn't happen, right?
Nope.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. It's a psychological thing, and we need to go back to that root of psychology and understand that. And then I like the fact that you've got this in there. I wouldn't even have thought that. I've never seen that in a preparing one's self for going out on a solo ride. And then the other thing... is understanding what to do if something unwelcome happens on a trip. Talk to us about that, because sometimes things do happen that you don't want to happen.
Well, that's what, listen, the difference between an adventure and a tragedy is if you live to tell the tale, right? You got to make a good story of it.
That's what Walt was saying earlier.
That's what I was saying earlier.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, so there's a lot that you can do to prepare for, something untoward happening. So, I talk a lot about, how to pack. I've got checklists for what to pack. I talk about documents that you need to carry, and I talk about putting things up in the cloud. I talk about services where, you know, EMS can get up to your medical records. I mean, I cover all that. And really, the more of that kind of preparation that you do for yourself and for your family, the better everyone will feel about you setting off on this journey. So I talk a lot about that. Then the other thing is just, I do talk about the most common hazards, you know, when you're out on the road are running out of gas, particularly out west. And I have a story about that in my book, and tire problems. And so I just talk about, you know, how to pull off safely when you're, you know, if something happens while you're, you know, on the road. I talk about, you know, quick repairs that you can do for tires. I talk about easy peasy ways that you can get gas. It's all in there. And the more you think about it and you break it down, look, 100 years ago when, what were their names? Adelaide and,
The Van Buren's, when they took off
100 years ago.
Abigail.
They didn't even have paved roads. They didn't have AAA. They didn't have hog chapters. They didn't have GPS. They didn't have cell phones. They didn't have anything that we have today. We have so much of this nailed down. If you plan ahead, you've got this. You've got this.
John, does this kind of sound familiar, some of the stuff that you've gone through on out on the road?
Yeah. I mean, there's always, it seems like in every trip, there's usually some unplanned thing that happens, and you either roll with it or you don't. And, you know, yeah, I mean, that's part of the adventure. That's part of the reason we go.
It is.
Well, you know, Tamla was talking about people in a car and not saying, well, I guess you won't ride in car anymore. Right after my big crash, they started saying, I guess you give it up, huh? And the difference for me was all the gear all the time. Okay, because mm-hmm. I went down and I had a horrendous wreck and walked away mm-hmm. with nothing but bruises because my gear paid the price for it. I mean, I had nothing left mm-hmm. by the time I was mm-hmm. done, but I knew it works. And so now I'm more confident riding my bike than I ever was before because I know I've still got all the gear all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. And
is that important too? Do you cover that kind of thing? Because I know you tend to ride with full gear.
I do ride with full gear. You know, this is a highly charged discussion.
Oh yes, it is.
can
and
be.
So I'm not gonna change anybody's mind. And, you know, I mean, I talk about my choices. You're going to make your own choices. You know, I don't spend a lot of time on it. I do mention it. But you're going to do what you're going to do.
Yep.
I think that's how we've always kind of handled it. We do stress safety a lot on the show. Mm-hmm. And we have our preferences, but there's a heck of a lot of people that we've interviewed that are in their 70s and they ride whatever way they want to ride and they're still with us. So it really comes down to confidence. So with that in mind, I wanted to talk to you about what are two or three of your most let's shift gears because we're going to run out of time. You've got a tour coming up that you're working with a friend of yours that's going to be called Tour of the Volcanoes in the West Coast. Talk to us about that.
Oh God, that's going to be so much fun. It's September 4th to the 14th. And I'm doing it with Karen Thompson. She's terrific. She's been a professional tour guide for over 20 years. She's done Edelweiss tours. She's done tours in Europe, the States, Alaska, everywhere. And a few years ago, we did this great itinerary in the volcanic region of Oregon, Washington, and California. So we put together this great tour. We'll do 8 volcanic sites, 8 national forests, 450 miles along the coast. We'll do the Redwoods, Mount Hood, Lassen, Columbia River Gorge. We're just going to hit all the iconic places in Oregon, Washington, and California. And that'll be, like I said, September 4th to the 14th. And I'm so looking forward to it. We'll do the Lost Coast. Any of you guys done the Lost Coast?
Probably, but just didn't know the name of it.
probably, yeah.
I've been.
So that's an option. Some people won't want to do Lost Coast. They'll want to go to the Redwoods. So you know, we've got an option for those who want to be a little more adventurous and those who don't. So yeah.
Well, we are just about run out of time. So Tamla, I have really appreciated having you come on. I think we all could say this has been a great interview, and we could have you on for another hour easily because you've got a lot to cover.
Yep.
But so what we'll do is we'll bring you back on after you've done your tour in the fall, and we'll follow up. So, Tamla, thanks so much for being on with us. And for more of
my pleasure.
You bet. So more information, go to TamlaRich.com. We're going to have a PDF of a checklist that you can get that she's put together kindly enough for us for free. Thanks for doing that.
Yeah.
Oh, my pleasure. Anything I can do to help the rider community, it really is my pleasure.
Excellent. Well, there's our music, and I just want to say thanks for hanging with us and for Tamla Rich being on with us. And hang on, we've got some more show, our safety tips, and our trivia questions coming up next.
It was a long and winding trail. Saw a chance to leave.
Hey everyone, Steve Johan here, producer of the World of Motorcycling show. If you have any interest in what's happening in the automotive world, then I invite you to listen to a really cool show called Horsepower Chrome and Rust, where we cover car culture and the automotive industry. Horsepower Chrome and Rust is a fast-paced weekly podcast featuring Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and me, Steve Johan. You can hear the show at horsepowerchromeandrust.podomatic.com, where we'll be waiting for you.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Do you suffer from gastrointestinal anguish after eating spicy foods at your local Mexican restaurant? Do you suffer outrageous amounts of flatulence after eating greasy foods at your local fast food joint? Do you suffer from acid reflux after ingesting copious amounts of alcoholic beverages at your local drinking hole? Then call the law offices of Ambulance and Chaser at 1-800-782-5377, where we've helped thousands of so-called victims just like yourself. If you call us today at 1-800-782-5377, we'll make sure to send you out our free guide, The Top 20 Medical Issues Most Likely to Be Sued Over. But act today, because the longer you wait, the less chance you have to win your case. Remember, you don't have to suffer any longer. Instead, call us at 1-800-782-5377. The Law Offices of Ambulance and Chaser, making the most out of your misery. Please be advised, the law firm of Ambulance and Chaser is not licensed to practice law in all 50 states and may be called into question by the federal government for questionable practices, but hey, that's okay. You knew that already, didn't you? You greedy sucker.
Welcome back to the fourth segment of our show. In this segment, we like to start things off with Between the Lines, where we share a weekly safety tip. John, what tip do you have for us this week?
Guys, you've heard the old saying that speed kills, right?
Yes,
so
I have.
If that's true, why don't all those guys at Bonneville, how do they not wind up dead? Because they're going awful fast.
All the gear, all the time.
I guess. Well, and you know, it got me thinking, and then just this past weekend, and I don't generally like bringing these things up because I think they're kind of a downer, but just this past weekend, we lost a rider up here in Skagit County out on Highway 20. The road's only been open a couple of weeks, but we've already lost one rider out there. Failure to negotiate the curve, went off the road and collided with a tree.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, 24-year-old man. So, youngish fella.
Was it on the east side or the west side?
Sorry?
Was it on the east side or west side?
It was on this side, on the west side.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because they got a lot of really good curves on the other side.
Yeah, that's true. So it got, and then the whole idea of, you know, it, the report came out, you know, and they talked about, you know, speed may have played a role, et cetera, et cetera. And that, it got me thinking, and I kind of got into instructor mode in a little bit. And honestly, I don't think speed was the problem. I think lack of braking ability was the problem.
Yes.
Because if that rider, if any rider, is able to use their brakes effectively and get their entry speed set appropriately for the corner,
right,
they're not going to run wide and not get themselves in trouble. So it's, you know, I harp on this all the time, folks, practice that braking, practice. You got to learn how to use those brakes so that when you need them, you have the skills and it's instinctive and you just go right to it. Yep. Especially with cornering. It's so important to get your entry speed set properly. Yep.
In the turn.
Yeah. Yeah. Get your entry speed set before you get into the turn. That way you can roll on that throttle as you're coming through. That helps stabilize the bike. You're not having to go to the brakes in the middle of the turn or chop the throttle in the middle of the turn, which causes everything to get unstable. And that's how you wind up in
trouble.
That's
how you end up, yep.
Well, when I first was riding and I didn't know how to use my front brake because I didn't take a rider course, I went into the bushes because I missed a hairpin corner, went right in the bushes. Now, I was only doing about 10 miles an hour, but then somebody said, use that front brake. And yeah. I'm like, oh. And I just, from that point on, they said, just push it, pull in it. And I'm like, it just was night and day. And yep. So this was probably a young, inexperienced rider.
May have been.
Or could have been somebody been doing it or yep. just got out in the spring. But you're right. And this kind of leads me to something here. It says the American Motorcycle Association strongly objects to the lack of motorcycle safety strategies in a recent released national report developed by the Road to Zero Coalition managed by the National Safety Council.
Yeah.
And AMA, which has been a member of the Road to Zero Coalition since its infancy, kind of a little upset that they didn't include them a little bit more, and they said that they should have had more discussion about ways to prevent motorcycle crashes, how to take measurements, blah blah blah. And I'm thinking, I just went to my son's driver safety course, and they are like zero. I mean, this is like target zero now. This is what they're pushing for. And yeah. I thought, you know what? I'm sorry, but I disagree with AMA because this is the fact. There is enough materials out there. We don't need more studies. We don't need more committees. We don't need any more money dedicated to studying while people get in accidents or die in a motorcycle. We know what it is. So I was a little oofed that they would make a big brouhaha about something that, quite frankly, we've been talking about every week, that anybody can pick up a book, two or three or four or five. You can go to your rider training and know that there's only a handful of reasons why people go down on a bike.
Yeah.
So I was, you probably know more about it because you heard about it in your training. Right, John?
Yeah, it came up. And here in Washington, they talk about Target Zero quite a bit. I mean, it's a big push at the state level. That's their goal. It's good to have a goal.
Well, it is. And you don't want any, the video says, how many people you think could die in a car or a motorcycle? Oh, blah, 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 blah. And they said, so how many in your family should die? Well, no, none. Isn't that what we should make it? So the point is, we should make it that. Is that a reality? No.
It's like perfection, right? I think it's an unachievable thing, but it's a good goal. It's a good thing to strive for.
Well, the
but
big
it's
thing
probably
that AMA,
not an achievable thing.
The big thing that AMA may be talking about is when Mary Peters was Secretary of Transportation nationally, one of her big things that she did was to try to let motorists, people in cars, know not to kill motorcyclists. You know, yeah. There are things that they could be teaching those kids or people who take these driver safety courses about motorcycles without them riding a motorcycle, just to say, watch out for the motorcycles.
Well, just to have the awareness, yeah.
Yeah, but it just pointed out their spokesman said, such issues as improved infrastructure and further study on the causes of motorcycle crashes. And I don't think we need further causes. That's like, I'm tired of governmental bureaucracy saying we need another committee to study this and study that. We know, we've known for many, many years. We just need to, and you know what, they move forward. They got their feelings hurt because they weren't included in it. And, you know, that happens. But So anyhow, so good advice there, John. And so quickly, Walt, do you see anything riding out on the road this week?
Well, as I've been riding around and so on, I've noticed an awful lot of people, as I was talking about the last week, about all the gear all the time, uh-huh. I've been noticing that the gear is going down. And this happens every summer, and mm-hmm. we need to cut that out. We need to be sure, like I say, I have mine. I have it right here that I have my mesh Kevlar jacket, and leather would not protect you as much as this jacket does. And yet, it's as cool as riding around in nothing but my T-shirt.
Right.
So
I got on the highway yesterday coming home from work and was a little ways behind a fella on a motorcycle wearing a tank top.
Yeah.
It was flapping in the wind, you know.
Well, I saw four state patrolmen on Sunday coming back from my motorcycle safety, motocross safety training class that I went, and all four of them had their T-shirt or their riding gear on, but they only had their short-sleeve shirts.
Short-sleeve right. shirts, yeah. Right. It's a half uniform
helmets
thing.
And,
you see that a lot.
Yeah. And they were in uniform, and then they pulled over, and then they got back on the road, and I thought, that's how they ride. Yep. So they figure if it's good enough for Chips, it's good enough for me. So anyway, speaking of safety, I got on a bike for the first time in a long time. I went to a dirt track safety training and spent all day Sunday from 8 o'clock in the morning till 3 o'clock learning how to navigate trails in the dirt in a dirt first safety. And we're going to have the owner of it on in a week or two. And
that's cool.
It was wonderful. I had a blast. I haven't been on a trail bike since I was a little kid. And quite frankly, I picked it up fairly quickly, and I just grinned all over the place. But after 3 o'clock, I was burnt because it was hard
work. One of the training nights that I had these last couple of weeks when I was gone.
Well, hang on. Our music's right there. We'll be right back with more, and we've got to interrupt John.
What comes to your mind when you think about motorcycle riders? The first picture that comes to my mind is a road warrior. A road warrior is someone who has a passion for life and adventure, who willingly pits themselves against Mother Nature and the dangers of the road, all for a chance to see the world from the seat of a two-wheeled iron steed. A road warrior must approach biking in the same manner as a good soldier, because just like your military counterparts, you will always face plenty of real and potentially dangerous situations every time you're on the road. These include bad weather, animals, road conditions, pedestrians, and other vehicles that share the road with you. I suggest we apply the soldier's way of life to our riding experience by following these few simple rules. 1. Get basic training. 2. Get to know your equipment. 3. Keep your equipment in good running order. 4. Be prepared. Like the good soldier who carries his 50-pound pack, it's a good idea to carry proper riding gear, tools, and other essentials, including a cell phone, credit card, and at least $5 cash. 5. Just as a good soldier follows instructions given to him by his superiors, we need to follow our instructions too. Know the law and follow it. By doing this, you are less likely to encounter traffic tickets, higher insurance rates, and possible impoundment of your bike. 6. And lastly, keep a cool head. A trained soldier always keeps his cool, no matter what is coming at him. You can't think clearly when you're angry. And speaking of clear thinking, a good soldier would never face the enemy under the influence of drugs and alcohol, and neither should you. Ride sober. So to all of you, fellow road warriors, God bless, ride safe, and we'll see you out on the road.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
Welcome back to the fifth and final segment of the show. We start things off with rallies and runs, where we briefly cover tours, rides, events, and more. Walt, what do we got going on?
Well, last night, we had Dragon's Last Ride fundraiser, and it turns out they collected nearly $2,300.
Excellent.
Outstanding.
So that was pretty good. That will actually go into the fund that Dragon's Last Ride actually creates. That one is on July the 14th here in Linwood at Emerald City Harley-Davidson. June 1st through 3rd, Reno, Nevada, Street Vibrations Spring Rally. And June 9th to 17th is Laconia, New Hampshire, Laconia Motorcycle Week. That's the one I always say I want to make it to. And then August 29th through September 2nd is the 115th anniversary celebration, and I confirmed it. They are going to start up number one again.
Oh, very good.
So,
you know what, we missed the old motorcycle show in Snohomish.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
They don't do a very good job of contacting
us. They don't.
So
it was happening before I knew about it.
The next thing I know, I'm like, oh, crap, that just happened. I didn't hear about that.
Yep.
So, you know, maybe our listeners are outside the area.
Yep. So, well, I actually would have gone.
Yeah.
I found out about it in time, and I would have gone, but we had a ceremony that we had to do at the morning church.
Yeah.
Where my church meets at night, and so I had to be there, so I
wasn't
able to go.
You were going to say something on the other side before we had to go to the break.
Oh, I was just going to talk about one of the these last couple weeks when I was gone. One of those evenings, I was actually getting certified to perform the three-wheel endorsement test, skills test. And so as part of that process, I actually had to take the three-wheel endorsement test. So I'm getting my three-wheel endorsement. Anyway, it was a really good time. We had some beautiful machines. They were Can-Am Spiders that were on loan that we were able to use to do the testing. And boy, it was just, those things are just such a kick in the pants. I mean, just really fun machines to run around on.
Now, what's the difference between three wheels with a spider and three wheels with a trike?
It's different handling.
Okay.
Pretty different handling. The spider's got kind of dynamic front suspension and whatnot, and almost I think it even has like a power assisted steering, whereas a conventional trike, if you will, with a single wheel up front, it's a little more effort to turn.
Yep.
Because the front end tends to plow a little bit,
I
think, under power. So we also had a sidecar rig there, which I did not ride, but it's at the range all the time, and I'll get some time in that too, just to know what that experience is like. That's a completely different beast too. But that spider was just a blast. And it was, you turn the thing on and it's got one of the little infotainment system screen that, you know, pops up and,
right,
you know, got a million buttons and whatnot. And it's kind of like, we're just ripping around the parking lot and just having a really good time. They're really fun machines.
Well,
so
I can see
the appeal.
I've seen guys out on the road and lately I've seen a lot of people just wearing helmets when they're riding. So I think that's a good idea because they're an open vehicle. So.
Helmets required on a spider. I mean, it's, you know,
there you
three
go.
Wheels or two wheels. You got to have a helmet on.
Well, there's our music and. Well, wow, that went way too fast tonight.
That did.
So I'm Walt.
And I'm John.
And I'm Steve.
Remember, keep the chrome side up and your rubber side down, and we'll see you out on the road.